It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Marcel, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker, and my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital, DVD, Tubi, Amazon Prime, and all the places.
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has directed two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently fundraising for my third Best Friends Forever. I'm a distribution consultant and a producer's rep, and I used to work at Sundance.
This week, we welcome writer-director Ben Stier on the show to talk about writing and directing his first feature film, Girl Without End, and how he raised the money and made it on a shoestring budget in his hometown with a small crew. After that, we play another round of The Game. But first, Liz, how are you doing today?
I'm good, and I have news, but I really don't know what I'm allowed to say, but I have this like crazy commitment to transparency that I feel like I'm going to say a little bit and see if I get in trouble later. I met with an actor on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
In the meeting, they expressed a commitment. They said, I'm in. They said, I want to do this. Like, under no uncertain terms. They were incredibly clear.
Wow.
We are waiting to hear back from their representation. And they are non-responsive right now.
They're like, oh, God, my client said yes to this thing. They should have said yes to, how do I get out of it? Well, and the client's like, I want to do it. And they're like, how do we get out of this?
She told me in the meeting that her team wanted her to do this. So my guess is that they're going to come back with an astronomical counter. Like, that's what we all kind of think is going to happen. And I'm just in this weird limbo of like, I know what I want. Like, I know what I want to happen, but I'm just waiting to see how it all shakes out. I think I won't get in trouble for saying that. And
you didn't say the names. So
I didn't say the names. Yeah. But this person that I spoke with, who I really want to work with, is actually in my orbit. And like, her husband, I think, has listened to me on podcast, and she even checked out my Patreon page before we met. So like, wow. I think she's going to become aware of the things that I say. And I just want to be super respectful to her and her privacy.
Well, that's awesome. So they're probably someone that I saw their face. I'd be like, oh, yeah, that person. That kind
I
of
think so.
Level. Yeah. Well, that's very exciting. How do you handle these meetings? Like, I would just be so busting with excitement when I meet with these people. Like, I met with somebody who was a series regular on a show that I really liked that played on a pretty big network for The Alternate. And I was just like, oh, you're cool. Oh, I'm so excited to be talking to you. You know, I was like really pumped, and I think it was well received and the meeting went really well. It's just we couldn't afford them, you know, we couldn't even afford to make an offer. It was one of those things. And I really wish.
But you got a meeting anyway?
Yeah, I got a meeting.
Wow. That's a big deal.
I mean, it was through a friend who put me in touch with the agent, and the agent set up a meeting because they are a person whose name you definitely probably wouldn't know. Their face you maybe would know, but if you like the show, you would definitely know who they are.
Right. That's kind of know? Like, yeah, I totally get that.
But they were like, they're pretty young and up and coming, you know, like this is their first show, and they've been in other movies and things, but like, you know, they were pretty big, pretty up and coming. So I think that's why I got the meeting, is because they weren't established enough to like say no. You know, and I think they wanted a leading role in an indie feature, you know, so I think like it was exciting. There was equal interest on both sides, you know, But yeah, anyways, it was so exciting. It was so fancy. I went to like this fancy hotel in downtown Los Angeles, like rooftop bar. Like I was like, oh, I think it was the Ace Hotel. It was so cool. I was like, I'm fucking cool. So cool. But yeah, anyways, so what's your feeling when you do these? Are you still in that energy or are you more like chill and like you got this, like this is every day for you now?
It was a Zoom, which was better for me because I could go, I could like go to the bathroom right before and I could like have everything. I had like a little cheat sheet right next to like these are the questions I would ask. So I actually really liked it. I've had other meetings with other actresses. Like, yeah, of course, I'm nervous. I'm nervous every single time. But then I just try to be cool. And then I just try to make sure they know that I adore them and that I want to, and this is going to sound weird, that I want to like protect and take care of them throughout the process. Yeah, like those are the only things I like feel like I need to impart. And if I do that, then I feel like then we're okay. But of course I'm a mess right before. And the whole day I'm thinking about it. I'm like practicing in my room alone. I'm like in the bathroom, like practicing things to say about the film. Funny. You know, like I'm like back when I'm 10 years old with like a hairbrush in front of the mirror. You know?
Well, the Zoom's better, right? Because like who doesn't like to be in their own chair, in their own home, in their own environment? I mean, that's pretty sweet. Do you, one last question on this. Yeah. I know I'm bothering you a lot, but like, do you use the same background that you're using right now or do you do a special background?
No, I do the same background. And then it's like an icebreaker. It's like, this is my kids' artwork behind me, you know? And then they're like, oh, you're a mother. And then I'm like, it's the ill. And then we talk a little bit about that. And it's like, I, for some reason, and maybe this is really like a wrong presumption, but I think I'm hoping that they'll make me, I'll be more relatable or I'll seem more safe or more I don't know. There's something about, God, this is really like me tapping into mom bias, but I'm thinking like, okay, well, they can't think I'm 100% evil because I am keeping something alive. Like maybe that's okay. Maybe that helps the conversation a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. I have no idea, but I don't change the background. Actually, I mainly don't do it because I think it's going to slow down my internet. So that's why I don't do it.
That's a good, keep with the internet that works, right?
Yeah, but what are you doing? What's going on?
Well, I had a little humble brag a little bit. I'll just tell the whole story. So on Sunday, I was just like fiddling around looking at Rotten Tomatoes. And I think I was looking at someone else's Rotten Tomatoes page and I saw like how many user reviews they had. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I got any new user reviews. So I checked. Foolishly, I checked to see if there are any user reviews, and there were, and they were like all old from like 2022 and 2023 and stuff. And I read like a bunch of like one star, like never make a movie again, worst movie ever seen. This is why I hate Rotten Tomatoes, because this has got a 75% and it's garbage. It's like, you know, deserves like
waiting
negative
for the
zero.
Humble brag, Ulrich. Like, when is it coming?
But there were some nice ones in there too. But and then the next morning, I wake up to an email from a stranger saying, you know, I watched your film, The Alternate, and here, I'm going to read it because I just read the negative ones. I might as well read the positive one.
Yeah.
It basically put me in this mood of just being like, just feeling so confident and so positive for like, I'm still writing off of this email that I got from this person. So, hello. Just thought I'd reach out and say I thoroughly enjoyed your movie, The Alternate. The film was shot lovely and the visual effects were never overbearing. I especially enjoyed the use of the pool shimmer lighting in the bedroom scenes to immediately give the viewer the knowledge of which world they were in. The movie was smart. The actions of the characters always made sense and were rooted in reality. I'm recommending the movie to all my videographer, photographer colleagues. Congrats on the success. Aww. It's like, what better email to wake up to first thing in the morning on a Monday, like after the vacation going to work. It was like, oh, that's what a sweet thing.
The treat.
Yeah. So that's the humble brag. And it was really nice timing because I just read those negative reviews. And so to hear from a real person, you know, who took the time to find my email and email me after watching the movie, I was like, oh, so wonderful. So thank you. I'll shout you out, even though I don't know. I'll just say Mitchell. Thank you, Mitchell.
Thank you, Mitchell.
That was such for the best email ever. Probably don't even know I have a podcast, but thank you, Mitchell.
What if Mitchell is just listening to the podcast and he's like, wait a second, that's me. You just made my day. What if you just created this like little cute little cycle of kindness?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that would be a beautiful thing. Other than that, yeah, I think that email made me pumped to like, you know, like, yes, I need to make another movie because I need to get better and I need to like see if I can do this again and like make a movie that people are like enough that they can write me an email and then also, you know, maybe get less negative reviews. Although I'm always going to get negative reviews. So, I mean, yeah, that's never going to stop.
Well, it means that your film is being watched. Like,
that's true. Feels good.
We did a Showtime deal with Speed of Life that was exclusive for 2 years. So during the pandemic, we didn't benefit from the streaming bubble. We were just on Showtime. And right. So like, I always feel like I'm jealous of your 1-star reviews. I'm like, oh my God, like that means people are watching your movie. Like, I really think very few people have seen Speed of Life. And so I'm like, oh, one day I'll get trolls. That'll be exciting. Like,
your movie's so good. You'll never get a troll for that movie. I love it.
Very sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. And then what else? Yeah. Still working on Amy Taylor's movie. She emailed me saying, I've heard the progress updates from the podcast. No worries. I was like, thanks, Amy. You're the best. And I just responded to her this morning. I'm actually really, really close to finishing organizing. So I think I'll be editing this week. But I mean, I was sick. I had 4th of July vacation. It was my daughter's birthday. It was Father's Day before. It's just so many things going. It's just really hard to find time. So, yeah, I'm optimistic for the future. And actually, I think I'm going to have a week off between my next two projects. So I'll definitely be able to spend a lot of time on it during that time too. But you know what also is a good thing for you to spend your time in is to go check us out on Patreon. Go to www.patreon.com/MMIHpodcast. This is the way that the show continues to survive, to live. This is how our editor Jeff gets paid for his work putting this all together. So thank you all the patrons who have supported the show. I know when Eric did the segments with me last week, he talked about some ideas he had to thank you guys and to get some extra content to you. So hopefully we can put those in motion soon and get you guys some bonus extra content, which would be great. Also, don't forget to leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts. That is a huge thing that helps us immensely. So if you take a few minutes to do that, that would be fantastic. But without any more further delay, here's our chat with Ben Stier. Well, welcome, Ben Stier, to the show.
Good to be here.
Thanks so much for being on here. Give us the elevator pitch for A Girl Without End.
Yeah, so, oh man, I'm terrible at elevator pitches, but I would say it's about this woman in the near future, and she's searching for an artificial intelligence that will help her create a singularity that will save her family. So she believes her family's stuck in a computer, and she can find the sympathetic artificial intelligence that will help her. But there's more to that. But
that's good. That's a good elevator pitch. That's an elevator ride's worth of information. I think it's appropriate. How many days did you shoot?
We shot a total of, it's hard to count days, but if I could quantify the days, I would say it was about 20 days. But it was 36 individual shoots.
Oh my God. 36 individual shoots.
Yeah.
Can you go into more detail of what that means?
Absolutely. So it was about an 18-month period we started shooting. So we started shooting every Saturday about September of 2020, and it took about 20 months. So when I say I started counting shoots instead of days, because we'd get together and it'd only be like 3 hours or 4 hours, and that's not really a full day, but it would be a setup and half a scene, and then we'd get the other half, you know, 3 months later.
Wow.
If I totaled all those up, it was about 20 days. We could have done it all in 20 days.
Oh, man. And then what was the rough budget of the movie, if you can say?
Oh, man, a budget. So a budget, I think that means that there's a set amount of money you plan to spend. And this film did not have that. But I will say I started keeping track of all the props and gadgets and things I was buying and gas money. All the actors, everyone participated on their cost of theirs by themselves. They paid their own way. But a couple of people would be reimbursed for traveling long distances. And then there's meals and stuff like that. So I would say it was about $11,000 over 18 months.
Wow.
Can you talk a little bit about the origin of the idea?
Yeah. there's a few different origins. Like one is like the origin of the story and one is the origin of how I made it. And the origin of the story was probably around 2014. I was just like in my unfinished basement and I just kept imagining these two girls like climbing through the window and like, what would they be doing? You know, like you just start musing on the idea. And I think Alexa came out about that time. This is me being like as honest as I can. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but so Alexa came out and it was like this weird thing that's sitting in your house that's answering questions. And I'm like, you know, we're like just a stone's throw away from this knowing everything. And so I'm like, what if they have like a futuristic Alexa thing and they're threatening it to get information they need and they have a whole bunch of them and they're just killing them. And they're instead of it being Alexa, they're all individuals because it's a possibility. And so that led me to that they need to, you know, find a sympathetic artificial intelligence to fix their problem.
Wow. And then you kind of alluded to it a little bit, but how long did you spend working on the film from like coming up with the idea to it being released?
Right. So my background is in documentary filmmaking, and I never thought I would be a documentary filmmaker, but I ended up doing a lot of it. And I had a documentary that I was working on that was partly funded, and I had someone that was going to fund the rest of it, and they were super excited about it, actually. And it was it's like March 19th. It was like that Thursday that all of a sudden the COVID lockdown like hit America and the world, I think, you know? So it was like, I talked to the financier. He's like, let's just talk in 2 weeks. 2 weeks turned into 2 months and then never again, right? Like everybody's, I feel like everyone I know's projects like nosedived. Like that time, all the creative people. And so I was just sitting around the house, like everybody, like the first thing that happened that Thursday is like my wife and I ran to Walmart and bought a TV to put in our bedroom. Cause we're like, we're just going to be in here for months, you know? And she's like on social media and she's like, Ben, by the end of COVID, everybody's going to be a hunk, a chunk, or a drunk. Like, what are you going to be? And I'm like, fastly on my way to becoming two of those things. So it's like, what am I going to do? You know? And so I started thinking, man, I just got to write something because I hadn't written something. And I've always written, you know, sci-fi films and stories. And so, gosh, I'm like, I got to write this thing. I got this idea about these two girls coming through a window. That's kind of where it started. And I just started writing it and I was writing it for myself, and which led the film to be like super personal, esoteric, kind of like, you're not going to understand it unless like you hang out with me for a while. And even some of the people that do still have questions about it. And like the first draft was massive, but.
So basically you wrote it in right when COVID started, roughly like, you know, April or March or so, based on an idea that you had in 2014.
Yeah. So I started in April and it took about 6 weeks for that first draft, and then a couple more weeks for another draft. And then I got together with my buddies and we did a table read, and halfway through writing it, I'm thinking, oh, you know, I could probably maybe make this, you know, it just occurred to me. I'm like, oh, I can have this friend do this and this friend do that. I think that they would do it. You know, like these are like, I'm thinking of people that I've played D&D with since I was like 15 years old. And we still play, honestly, like every week. And so I'm like, you know, like my buddy could do this and I could probably do that. And so I like go through my gear and I start putting stuff together and I just started building it. And then we all went and had like a camp out in the middle of July, and we did a table read with it and everyone loved it.
Amazing.
Okay. I have 45 questions about that. But if you could change one thing about the film in any way, the process, the product, your experience, you know, what would it be?
Change one thing. I think I would simplify the story. I think that I wanted to say too much and I wanted to say too much that I was thinking. My first draft was pretty big. It was like 140 pages. And then by the time we got to shooting, I was just going through and chopping out stuff that, because, you know, no budget, I had to chop out the stuff that had budget. So I'm peeling that back and I peeled it back to about 102 pages. So I think that at the beginning, I think that's kind of what I would do.
So I really want to hear about what it was like to shoot one half of a scene and then like months later shoot the other half of the scene. Like, how do you even like keep that straight in your mind? And how does that work for the actors? Like, talk to us through the process of how you made that happen.
Yeah, you hope. So there's like probably the biggest one is there's a scene where the young version of our lead, Emma, she's like the 12-year-old version, And we cast her daughter, and her daughter's at this age where she's, her body's changing rapidly. And so we shoot one scene where she has dinner with her dad. And then there's a scene before, right before that, that was shot months later, and another scene that was shot even later. And the scene right before is just her like checking her phone, walking in to see her dad. And the scene after that is that she takes an axe and chops up his favorite chair. And her body is changing so fast. We had the rush, but you know, you kind of hope. And I was worried about that too. Like I was super worried about it, but I watched Brothers McMullen, and in that film, his shirt will change like mid scene. And in the commentary, he says, you know, I was worried about it too, but no one ever said anything to me about my shirt changing. So it doesn't matter. And I'm like, yeah, you just Brothers McMullen it. Like you just go, like the audience will follow along. They're not going to care that this girl has aged or that the lighting's a little bit different, you know, and had this been like a bigger shoot or a bigger budgeted thing, like all those problems could be solved easily.
I was just thinking about in my first feature, I was obsessed with the continuity of a watch. Yes. I was like, what about the watch? We don't have the watch. And it's like, no one cared about the watch. I totally get it.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games like blackjack with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's high, the number 5, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
There's something about you retelling the origin of writing this film that really struck me. It didn't sound like you were like, oh, I gotta make a feature. I gotta make a long-form project. Like, the passion wasn't coming from just getting a feature off the ground, which we hear a lot. We always hear people like, I wanted to make a feature, so I made a feature. It felt like it was project first. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I always wanted to make a narrative feature, and I started making narratives. Like, my background was I went to advertising school, and because I thought that was the only way you could make money as a creative. And that led me to working at an agency, becoming a creative director. And when you're in that role, you're always working with production companies. And so I would look over and I would see the production company and I'd be like, oh man, they're doing the fun thing. What I'm doing sucks. Like, they're all having fun. And you get together, you shoot a broadcast commercial, and then they all go off and you see how much money they're making. And this is like in 2003. And so in 2006, I just decided, that's it. I got to dive in, you know? And so we went and we made a short film, and I'm like, this is what I got to do with my life. And so that led me into doing documentary. So I never got to go back to that narrative format. And so when COVID happened and my documentary film fell apart, I thought, you know, this could be my chance to do that. So it was kind of more project driven, because I do feel creatively fulfilled shooting and making documentaries and branded content and all kinds of stuff like that. And it is kind of fun to do a piece of branded content that, you know, will go out to like 5 to 6 million people, you know, and people will be talking about your joke on, you know, major blogs and stuff. So, I mean, that, for those of you who don't know, like, I took over the web series Will It Blend after the first filmmaker left. And so I kind of stepped into this world where you can write something and it would go out to 12, 15 million people. And that was, it was a blast. And so you feel super fulfilled, but it's still not all these stories that I just kept writing in the evening, you know, and once you start writing, you can't stop doing that stuff. Like, I love listening to the show and hearing Ulrich talk about, you know, like, oh, I did a page last night, you know, oh, I did 2 pages, and I feel the same way, you know, it's like, oh, I did a page. So
nice. So I missed a little bit of what you were saying, but I think you didn't talk about this a lot, but when you decided to make your feature, Did you just know that you could get the locations you needed? Did you have that already planned out through like your network of friends, or was that something that you had to discover throughout the way of like where you were going to shoot this? And then secondary question, where are you based? Are you Los Angeles based or somewhere else? Like, because I think that also makes a difference on how you pull this off.
Yeah. So I'm just south of Salt Lake City and Lehigh. So, you know, right near the tech center. And locations is a huge, huge issue with no budget films. But I think we got lucky because I knew I had my house. And then we know my producer, Luke, and his wife was starring in it. And we knew we had their house. And so most of the movie takes place between the two homes. But there are lots of other places. And so I would drive around town and just like walk in, talk to companies and be like, hey, I'll shoot a piece of branded content for you if you let me shoot in your warehouse. And I had a couple of companies say yes, but then fell apart. And then there, I found this old, just, you know, you just drive around when you have time. And I found this old mall that was like 90% vacant, you know, and they just let joggers in the morning in the wintertime. And so I went in and just into the office and I said, what does it take to rent, you know, for a party? Because I saw they had party rentals. And I'm like, it's a party, but really, honestly, I'm going to be filming. And they're like, oh, we don't care. And 3 days for $100. And I'm like, done. And not only that, but they let us on the roof, in the basement, in the back rooms, any like the old Payless shoe store, like they just let us go anywhere for 3 days and shoot like crazy. It was like one of those, it was just a miracle. So between that, some outdoor locations, we got it all. The last one was the last scene. I needed a warehouse. And so I could not find a place to save my life to shoot this. And I shot in my basement. I shot all over my house like 10 times. I'm like, there's no way. I need a new look for this last scene of the film. And I had this big hallway scene is like the most critical scene in the whole film. And so I start calling real estate agents, and there's this old grocery store. I'd be like, man, if I could film in there, that, and call and leave messages, and you know, get the run of the mill. And then finally I find one real estate agent who's like semi-retired. He's like, I know a guy who's got an old linoleum factory. Like, you should just text him. And he responded to me and he's like, well, if my wife and kids can be in the movie, sure. And I'm like, done. Your wife and kids are now in this movie. And they're in it. And so he gave us that for a whole day for free. We shot in this crazy, stinky, sticky linoleum factory. It was awesome.
And I think a lot of us have done similar things where we're totally okay. I mean, it's bribery, you know, but it's right. Like, it's like a nice form of bribery, and it like gets your film done, and it's like community building and collaboration. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like, is, because again, this seems like paradise. Like, you're making a local film with the resources you have. But did you ever have moments where you're like, okay, we're going to bring in one person from LA, or we're going to cast this differently? Or were you really like, I just want to make this with my friends and my family?
Well, Kristen, who started the film, she's super active in local theater, community theater. And so it was super awesome to have her just like say, oh, I know who can play that part. And she would call that person and just cast them for me. I would say that was 90% of the casting. And then a little bit of it was me reaching out to people on Facebook, you know, like local actors that just needed something to do, to act in. And, you know, I'm like, hey, there's not going to be any compensation, but you'll get a chance to do something in this film. And people would show up. So I did cast one guy who's in the film a little bit, and I had more for him to do, but he moved away. And so I just ended up cutting his dialogue scene. So because he couldn't come back, and I didn't want to recast him or reshoot. That was one goal. But I don't know, that answer that.
I'm just curious how much of this was strategic and how much of it was improvisational.
As far as the casting?
As far as like just the organizing of the shoot in a local way and working with your community. Ulrich and I, and like mm-hmm. very often we'll talk to filmmakers who will say, you know, I tried to send my script to these ex-producers, or, and they shot, you know, they tried to reach a little bit of a wider net. And when it didn't work out, the local filmmaking was their backup plan. And I think that's kind of interesting, because it could very much be the first plan. It could be the ideal circumstance. And it just sounds like I couldn't tell whether it was that for you.
Yeah, no, I never intended to go out to anybody else. Like when I halfway through writing it and I realized that this is maybe something I could just make, I just started thinking of my friends. And my friend Luke, who I play D&D with, like his wife is this community theater director, actor. She's on a chair of a theater. So I was thinking, you know, she would just be perfect. And so I just started writing the whole film around her. And I was excited because as a filmmaker doing documentary, you're always hunting for the heart of whatever it is, the interview you're trying to get. And when you do narrative as a filmmaker, you think, well, what can I create? You know, like if you just hand me a camera and you say, hey, go make something funny, can I do that? If you hand me a camera, you say, go make something scary, can you do that? Like, I didn't know what I could do. I knew I could create intensity. That was like the one thing I knew I could do. I'm like, okay, so that's what this film's going to be. It's going to be intense. I want intensity. And so I knew Kristen can do that because I know she can go to level 11, the drop of a hat, and surprised most of people when she would too. And so that kind of leads into what I'm working on now. But when I started the film, I'm like, okay, that's what I could do. And so that really became the star of the show is her major freakouts that she does in the film.
So I have a lot of questions, but I kind of want to jump to a more end question with the project. So like, you know, you make this movie in this amazing way, you know, you take 18 months, you know, you get your movie done on a super low budget. What's the plan? Did you do film festivals? I see that it's available to rent on Amazon. Yeah. Is that just stage one of the distribution? Like what are your plans to get the movie out into the world?
Well, there's one thing I'd like to share real quick as I lead into distribution is that I'm not super good at visual effects. And I did have some visual effects stuff planned in this film. And during the middle, you know, shooting on weekends, I had a moment where I was just stalled with visual effects. And I had a commercial job at the same time where I'm shooting a real big visual effects scene for some branded content. And I reached out through Upwork to a visual effects artist that I liked his stuff. And it's crazy. I hired him to do this branded content thing. And so we're working on that. And I wake up in the morning and he's like, because we're chatting, he's like, oh, Ben, I have to leave my house. Like Russians are invading my home. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Ihor? And he's like, yeah, my country is at war now. And he's like, I'm going to the shelter. I'm taking the drives. And then I didn't hear from him for 2 weeks. And it turns out he's in Ukraine. And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, his house was bombed, completely destroyed. And he comes and shows me some photos of it the next day. And he's like, well, I mean, I got my son, my wife, our dog, and my father who lived with us. We're all safe in the shelter. I'm going to keep working on your project. And I'm like, no, forget that. God. I know. I'm like, my son's too young to fight, and I have some medical issues. So the only thing I can do is maybe get to a hospital because I've run out of insulin. And so I don't know if you know how Upwork works, but when you hire somebody, all the money goes into an escrow account. And I told my wife, we're sitting in bed that night, and I'm like, honey, I think I just should release the money to him and then make it up with the company later. And so that's what we did. So we went into Upwork and we released, as the production company, my production company, we released the funds to him, and he was able to get to a hospital, and ultimately he was able to get to a safe place. So
wow,
it was an incredible experience and super emotional. But then he ended up a month later, he came back to me. He's like, so can we finish that project? And I'm like, well, you know, actually I ended up shooting other stuff for that company to make up for that. What I did, we just came up with practical solutions, and they're happy. I don't know if they're ever going to hire me again, but they are happy with what they got. And I honestly, I don't care if they hate me, because I'm glad that you were able to get your family out. And he's like, well, is there anything else I can help you with? And I said, well, I don't really want to ask. And he's like, no, please, I want to do something. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm making this movie. Like, I have these six shots. Do you want to do them? He's like, yes. And so he did, I'm not going to say all, he did most of the heavy lifting because of, you know, what he could do in Houdini and all the advanced VFX packages that he had access to. I just don't want to throw Matt Porter under the bus, who also helped with VFX too. So,
wow, that's an incredible story. Wow, that's really great that you're able to help him that way.
It just worked out. You know, it was probably there for a reason. And so I'm not going to, you know, I don't really think too much of it. It was awesome. I'm super glad that he got able to get the safety. So the other question was with distribution. Like, Yeah, we did. We were planning on going to festivals. Like, that's what I was thinking. And like, I really wanted to go to festivals. And there were so many people involved in this film. And I had built an email list of about 3,000 people over the course of the 18 months. I just spend like $2 to $5 a day on Facebook ads, like saying, hey, like, come check out our independent feature film and have a chance to win a couple DVDs. And we collected some people that end up being big fans. And then we probably collected 3,000 people that just wanted a couple free DVDs. But we got some fans out of it. And so when I'm going to festivals, I'm thinking, okay, so I'm just going to submit to all of them. And all the people that were involved in the film, like, they've never been to a festival or had the experience of getting turned down by all the big festivals. And I've been turned down by all the big festivals so many times in my life. I'm like, why even try? I don't even want to try. Like, but they're like, okay, I'll pay for Sundance. And so someone pays for the Sundance submission. Someone says, I'll pay for this one. And we actually started getting accepted into a couple festivals. And then I started thinking about it. Like, in my mind, I'm meditating on this. I've finishing the film. It's pretty much done. Submitting the festivals. I got accepted into one so far, a pretty cool festival, actually. And not a major festival, just a fun genre festival. And I thought, okay, so that means that this festival doesn't happen for a whole nother year. That's a whole nother year. I have to live with this project on my hard drive after all this time. And I feel like it's going to just slow me down and keep me from moving on to the next project. And so after spending like $3,000 on festival submissions, I canceled them all. And I decided that I was just going to pay for my own four wall at a local theater and invite everyone that was involved to it, have a really awesome time, have a Q&A, and then I will just put it on Film Hub.
Yeah. Well, when you said cancel them all, did you get your money back, or did you just cancel them? And you got into ones that you didn't go to?
Well, we were accepted officially into one, and a lot of the other ones were pending. And I just go with my gut a lot on that stuff. Like, that's why I'm a terrible producer. I'm a creative. Like, I need to be creating. I can't keep producing. And so I just went in, and I think on, I can't remember the name of the film, Freeway or something. Is that what it is? I just went in and hit cancel on all of them. Like, you know, don't worry about it. Thanks for maybe screening my film.
Dang, that seems like madness to me, man.
I love it. It's
crazy.
I think it's so cool. Did you regret that? Because I want to hear that you did not regret that.
I regret turning down the festival that accepted us. I should have held out for that festival because they were super cool people. But I also freed myself from this film. Like, it had me in shackles. Like, it's too personal. So it's like getting rid of it freed me up to move on and, you know, write the next thing, do more brand. It was holding me back. It was holding me down. I needed to just get it done and move on.
Wow.
I had a question.
That's so crazy.
I'm going to jump in with it. All right. Sorry. Go on.
No. I'm just like, having just released my first feature a year ago, it's like what you're telling me.
By the way, congratulations. That film is awesome, dude.
Like, oh, thanks,
like,
man.
I bought your, I attended a couple of the virtual film festivals, and watching that movie, I'm like, how did Ulrich make a movie about me? Like, there's spoiler alert. Like, there's a scene where he gets a gig, and it's like, you get the feeling it's like 3 or 4 days, and his producer comes by to check on how he's doing. He's like, okay, let's check it out. Hits tab on the computer to play the timeline. There's like one clip. Oh, that's me. It's totally me.
I made this movie for you, dude. You're the core audience.
I love it. Bought it on iTunes.
Because you're me too, right? Like, that's why.
By the way, if you're listening and you haven't seen it, you got to go see it, because there's like this super awesome, cool thing that happens at the end that's just going to slap you in the face. It's so cool.
Oh, thanks, man.
I love it.
That means a lot. Yeah, no, it just, anyways, continue, Liz. It's just amazing.
It's really sweet. Ben, you sent us a few emails before, you know, when we were talking about getting you on the show. Mm-hmm. And you said something about how you felt like you had broken out, or you broke it into the industry when you worked with Nat Geo for a larger project.
Yeah.
And then it felt like you kind of broke into the industry again with this feature. Can you talk a little bit about that feeling? If anyone listens to the show, then I'm obsessed with like feeling included in the industry. Yeah. And I would just love to hear emotionally what you went through.
Oh, well, you know, I think I voluntarily excluded myself. I don't know what it was. Like I didn't, when I went into filmmaking, like I said, I wanted to do narrative. I want to make Blade Runner. Like I want to make these cool sci-fi genre films. Like, and when you fall into developing reality TV, even if it sells, it's different. It's a different beast. And it did lead me down a documentary path, which I'm grateful for. It's super fun. And I love interviewing. I still love interviewing. And like the rubber is hitting the road in documentary because it's so real. Like there's so much in narrative filmmaking where you're trying to fabricate reality, but in documentary, it's just all there in front of you. And so, yeah, my partner and I at the time, we created and developed a show for National Geographic, and it aired 6 1-hour episodes. And we were credited as development producers, but in my heart, I feel like there's a lot more that was taken from us that could have been for that film, for the film projects, for those episodes. And I'm super grateful for the opportunity. I learned so much. One thing that happened was we had agents from major agencies come at us and say, hey, here's a contract. Like, here, let's sign this. We'll be your agent. And these are agencies that everyone would know if you named them. And we got the contracts in front of us and we're looking at them. And I'm like, you know, this is really cool. And it was totally naive on my part not to sign it. Like I should have signed it, but we didn't sign it because we thought there would be something bigger. Like you always think, especially when you're younger, I was like 29 years old. And so I thought, you know, I did all this on my own steam. I was a creative director. Like I've already had the rebuilt classic cars and the sports cars. I had everything that I wanted. So it was so I turned it down. It was the stupidest thing I've done in my career so far, like pushing myself away from the industry. But now it's like, I kind of love the independent industry. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, it was a big learning experience. Totally so made the wrong decision.
So I can't really let this go. I have to ask again about Girl Without End. So like you said, that, you know, by canceling all the film festivals, you freed yourself from the project, and now now it's out available for rent for $2 or $1.99 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Is that it? Like, are you planning anything else with the movie, or is it like now, like, cause basically if all your mailing list people rented the movie, that would be like half your budget right there.
Yeah. You know, they might have rented it, but there's no way for me to check on how much it's streaming. You know, I know for a fact how many people bought it because they told me. Distribution is such a weird thing right now, and I know so little about it. And so, I mean, just enough to get everything put together on Film Hub. I would like the film to be for free on Amazon. I don't want to like take away from all the people that have put work to, you know, put it on Film Hub. So, but if there's a way to just make it on Amazon for free, I would do it, you know.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today and get free welcome coins you can spin for a chance at cash prizes. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
So you have 4 children, you know, Yes. You're talking to us. We each have a kid in our arms, by the way, for anyone who's listening,
Yeah. Maybe
you're hearing adorable, them by during the recording. If 4 children, you have a stable income, you know, you live in a place that doesn't have skyrocketing rent or cost of living, as far as I know, in terms of, I don't know Utah really well, but I'm pretty sure doesn't cost gazillions of dollars to live there. So I'm just curious about, are you going to do this model again? Are you doing this micro budget model of filmmaking again? Or are you staying in Utah? Like, what did you learn from the making of this movie that you're going to apply to the next movie? Because I'm also hearing regret about pushing away the industry. So.
Yeah. The next film. So Girl Without End was like, I knew it was not going to be a super commercial film. Like, I think there would be moments in it that are super commercial, but Like when I look at that and I look at a film that I consider super commercial, like Drag Me to Hell, I'm thinking that's not what my film is. It's not that, it's not a commercially successful film. So that's one of the reasons to rush through the distribution process and get rid of festivals. And because, you know, ultimately festivals, I felt like it was just, it was serving my pride more than anything else, like trying to hold on to stand in front of a crowd. And I'm like, I don't really need that. I think we can, and everyone wanted to just see it on the big screen. That's the only reason they wanted a festival. So I'm like, well, if we just four wall and everyone can have that experience and then we can move on and I can put this out in the world and start focusing on the next one. Cause I would not, I don't think I could get away with doing it again. I don't think I, it's too many favors. It's too much to ask of people to show up to do it again. It's yes, you're right. Like some people, there's a few people that like would be like, yes, I'll be there, but that's just not enough. It takes more than three people to say, yes, I'll be there. You know, you need 25 people to show up to make a film. And so the next one, I'm hell bent on making something that is going to be so commercially successful that is 100% designed and engineered to make money. That's kind of what I started when I started writing the one that I'm working on right now.
So what's the plan for production and for fundraising for this one?
So right now, just talking to a couple producer friends, haven't solidified anything yet. So I have it written and I'm like, you know, 17 drafts in and I feel like the beats are hitting. I'm at this point of it where I have like a card for each scene that has like, you know, what the buttons are, like how it's going to hit, like what's going to drive the tension, the suspense. It's modeling 100% off of every single word Jason Blum has ever said, 100% off of all my favorite horror sci-fi films, like trying to figure out a way where I can have people just freak out in their seats, especially like Jason Blum says, women 18 to 29, you know, who drag their friends to these things. So scary, not gross, like all those, all of his interesting things that he's discovered that drive film sales, 100% engineered for film sale. And I think it goes to back to saying, like, as a filmmaker, how do you know you can make something scary? You know, and I didn't ever think I could make something or write. I still don't know. I mean, I know I can make something scary because I did some one thing that was super scary, but that's what this film is basically. Sorry, I'm nervous. I rambled.
I don't think that's rambling. I also think it's funny that I would say if you asked me a similar question a year ago, I was going around being like, I'm making a movie that's going to make money. That's my main goal. Like, that's all I talked about.
Yes.
And then, and at first, and I have given up. I'm not saying you should, but I've given up the faith a little bit. And now I'm going back to focusing on process. And what I think is really funny is that I'm entirely focusing on grossing people out, which you're telling me that Jason Blum says is the least commercial thing you can do.
Yeah, he says scary, not gross.
Yeah, I'm doing all gross, probably not scary, just nonstop gross. I had to interject with that. And I know Arik has like 45 questions, but we're also gearing towards our five questions. What do you want to do, Arik?
I just want to say that I know that instinct because when I finished Alternate and my movie, for those who don't know, is a super slow burn, like suspense, tense, like not a lot happens, you know, action wise until the end sort of movie. And so what I wrote after that was like, every scene is an action scene. Every scene is an explosion or, you know, alien this or, you know, mad scientist that or whatever. And so it's like, it's the same kind of thing that you're saying. Like every scene is going to be something that like genre fans are going to go nuts for, you know. Yes. I am not following the Jason Blum model at all. I'm kind of more on the Joe Bob model where it's just like nuts and crazy and whatever and everything I can dream of. And so that's what I'm working on now. And so it's I just think it's funny that like when we make movies and we make a movie one way, our instinct is to go the other way. But then like what I think I probably should do if I was smart is to make another movie that's more similar to the Alternate, because everybody who sees the Alternate and likes it, they want to be involved in another project that's similar to that project because that's what they like. They don't want something that's completely different, and they don't know that I can do something completely different. So then it's like there's less trust for the fundraising. So it's like if I was a smart person, I would make a movie more like the Alternate for my next movie. But instead, I'm like, no, F that. I'm going to go crazy. So I don't know. Well, just a thought. Not a question. Just a thought.
Right. Like when you're making a film and you're unaware, you know, you're aware of the moments you're trying to create, but then you create these other moments that resonate with you and your audience, and you're like, okay, well, that was in my film and those people liked it, like what if I did more of that? You know, like it that's why I met with a producer a long time ago. He's an Academy Award winning producer, and he looked at all my projects. This is years ago, and he was at a level, he was retired, so he's really not going to do anything. He might introduce me to somebody if I wanted to, but he gave me a piece of advice. He said, you just need to go make your narrative film because you're going to discover stuff about your process. And he's like, the way kids are doing it now. And he called me a kid. I was like 34 years old, but you know, he's like, the way kids are doing it now is you just got to go do it. And I'm like, you're right. And ultimately did take his advice and just went and did it.
Well, awesome. I'm excited that for you to make lots of money and to get more classic cars, Ben, because you need
no,
more.
I sold all those to fund my filmmaking process.
Oh, no. Well, awkward segue to the first yes. question of the final six. What's the first film you ever made and how do you feel about it now?
I'm going to go way back. So we talked a little bit about like the first real thing I did, but I wouldn't consider, which is my first IMDb credit. I wouldn't consider that my first film. I'd say my first film was when I was like 13 years old, like 1987. I don't know how old I was, 14. And I wasn't allowed to touch the camcorder, the family camera. I said, I'd break it. And I was, you know, I still do. I'm like a bull in a china shop. And I was even worse back then. I was brutal on things. But I could take the camera and I could do stuff with it. And then, you know, it was being between like someone's birthday and someone's like retirement party on the tape for the family. And my mom would see it, she'd laugh. And so that made me to do these little vignette things whenever I can get the camera. And so I'd say the first thing that I put effort into and like premeditated was I recorded a voice. I was really in the ninjas. And so I recorded my voice talking about this ninja, how cool he was, on a cassette tape. And then I played that while the camera was rolling in my living room, and the cassette tape was behind the camera. So the voiceover is hitting the camera mic. And then I jumped out in front of the camera in a full ninja suit, and I'm doing all these ninja moves in the living room. And that comes to a point in the voiceover on the tape deck where it's like, and he could fling live zucchinis at will. And at that point I pull a zucchini out of my ninja pocket and I throw it right at the camera. I'm like, everyone's out of the house. Like, everyone's gone. I took the camera from its place where I'm not supposed to touch it. And the zucchini goes flying across the living room and smacks right into the lens of the camera at like 100 miles an hour and just explodes. And the camera goes flying off the countertop where it was sitting on some books and just smashes on the ground. So my greatest fear comes true. Like, I broke off like the lens hood and some buttons and super glued them back on before anybody got home. And I thought I was going to be in super big trouble, but no one really noticed. But then when my mom saw it, she laughed her head off. So, and it became this like, you know, it's like in between Christmas and my sister's birthday is me throwing a zucchini at the camera. And I would say that's probably the first thing that like I put effort in to making.
That is incredible. What's the best filmmaking advice you've ever received?
So I think filmmaking advice, I think it has to come from who I consider a great master. You know, advice he gave to the world, which was Frank Capra. And he said, you have to believe in yourself because only the valiant can create and only the daring should make films. And only the morally courageous are worthy of speaking to their fellow men for 2 hours and in the dark.
Beautiful. It Happened One Night is probably my second favorite film of all time. Pretty obsessed. Give us some bad advice. Did Capra lay down any crap? Do you have any bad advice to share?
Capra. Well, I think he spent the first half of his career like fumbling around, like just writing gags and having fun with it, and kind of fell into making some awesome silent era films. And when he came out of that, he made some cool films, and he accidentally came across a film with Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where it had heart in it. And I feel like he stumbled onto something, because that quote led to that happening. And then he got really sick, and he got so sick he couldn't get out of bed. And a man came and told him that. And so that he took that for the rest of his life. He's dedicated. He was going to make films about the heart. Bad advice. I'm full of bad advice. Like, I feel like, yeah, my wife said, don't disparage anybody on this podcast, but I feel like there's a lot of people that give me bad advice. So I don't want to give any. I think another cool Frank Capra thing is that he learned from Max Sennett, who's like the original king of comedy. And because he was writing gags for Our Town, Little Rascals. Like, this is, I'm super into old time Hollywood, by the way. he's like, Frank Capra, your gags suck. You know, basically, you gotta up your ante. And Frank's like, what did I do wrong? He's like, listen, every gag, every movie, every story, everything on film you can ever imagine boils down to this one thing. And here it is. What kind of pie, who throws it, who ducks, and who gets hit? And he's like, if you do that, and you're going to have hits. You're going to have, you know, you're going to make wonders on film.
Big Marx Brothers and Three Stooges and Laurel Hardy fan over here. So I'm right with you. Yes. I recognize that name. So what then, do you have a goal as a filmmaker?
Make money. That's the next film is going to make money. This is going to be it. You know, you think you read all the success stories from filmmakers and you're like, that was the film that broke them. Okay. Well, what's breaking filmmakers right now? It's awesome, awesome horror films. That's breaking filmmakers.
If you could go back in time, what's the piece of advice you would give yourself?
Sign that original Abrams artist papers. No, that's terrible. You're shaking your head no.
I just want to say one thing about that. Again, we've interviewed tons of filmmakers. Most of them say that their representation does nothing for them. So I don't think you have some sliding door situation going on.
Okay,
right now,
that's good. I mean? All right, well, a piece of advice I give myself, eat less. I don't know. I love time travel questions. It's like, what would really make a difference in my life if I had heard it? What age am I going back to? This is your hypothetical.
Whatever you want. 3 years old, 5 years old, 20 years old.
Say 23. You know, I didn't go to film school. I went to advertising school. I didn't really know film school existed. It was kind of this myth. This is like right when the internet was breaking up, like it blowing up like in 97. I knew I needed to do something. I did a lot of fine art before that and music, and I wanted to do something creative. I would say, maybe if I could go back, I would say, hey, Ben, advertising school's cool. You're going to learn a lot, but you should look into film school. You should look into that more. I think I would have appreciated that.
Nice. And last question, is making movies hard?
The only career joy I get now is making art through film. I've learned through the years that whenever I try to hire someone or partner with someone that knew a trick or knew something to get past the hard part, and I did that, I engaged them to help me get past the hard part, that I shortchanged myself, that there are no shortcuts, that I've learned that the joy is the hard part, and that I'm grateful. Yeah, so I'm grateful that making movies is hard.
I love it. Okay, this is your time to advertise yourself. Get your stuff out there. So where should people go if they want to see your movie, if they want to see your work or follow you? What should they do?
I would say probably the best way right now is just to go to girlwithoutend.com. It's the website for the movie. You could see all the cool behind the scenes stuff. You could see stills from the movie. You could see two trailers, one tutorial that I did on storyboarding is on there. There's also, you can sign up for the mailing list, and my social, the social links at the top and bottom are my social links.
Liz, what do you remember about our talk with Ben?
I mean, honestly, it's been a little bit of a long time. It's been several weeks since we talked with Ben. I remember him being very thoughtful and kind. I remember that he listened to our shows, so I felt like I couldn't, like, all my tells, like he would be able to, he probably knew what questions were coming, right? And then a little bit after we record the podcast, I received, I think he mentions it, and maybe I don't know if Jeff is going to keep it in, but Ben sent me a Lillian Gish book about Lillian Gish's work with E.W. Griffith. And again, I thanked him back then, but I'm thanking him again because that was a very cool thing. Thanks, Ben. So I just remember it just being like a lovely conversation. What is your memory?
I remember going into this thinking I knew what the conversation was going to be like based off of the email he sent. And then it was like completely different than what I thought it was going to be in the best way possible. Like, I think we talked a lot more about process in a way that we don't normally talk process with directors. And we kind of got into Ben's head a little bit more than we do with them with a lot of guests. Like, I think he was really open about like why he made the movie, why he wrote the movie, how he made the movie. Like, it was more about like the full, I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, but it felt like it was more about the philosophical decisions behind it, not just the physical act of like how he raised the money and how he made the movie. Although we covered those things too. I didn't really include that in the description of the show because it was kind of hard to like bottle into like a quick little sentence. But yeah, I just thought this was like a really unique, different conversation that like, I'm really excited to share with people. And we held on to it for a long time just because we had a lot of other episodes that needed to come out on a timely fashion, and Ben didn't have any like stipulation of when this should come out. So like when we get those kinds of guests, which we have quite a few, their episodes just tend to get kicked down the line a lot, which our apologies that that happens. But yeah, I'm really excited for people to listen to this, because I think it's like a really interesting insight into like the mind of a filmmaker like me, you know, and maybe like you too, Liz, who just are figuring out how to make their movies any way they can. And like they're not getting paid for them. It's not a thing where you're going to necessarily see a huge return on your investment or your time investment or raising the money or whatever. But like you just do it because you love it and you have to do it. Yeah. And it felt like that kind of conversation, you really got into the nitty gritty of like that kind of person. So I really loved it for that reason.
That's amazing. You have a much better memory than I do, but that all feels accurate. It feels appropriate.
It felt like I hope it is accurate. Not just my memory extrapolating all these details, but I think it is true.
With that, I think it's time for the game. I always want to toss it to you to do it more properly.
The game.
Yeah. Everyone cheers. What is the game, you ask? Well, the game is a handmade, homespun, original segment straight out of the mind grapes of our producer, Eric Toms. Eric puts forth a hypothetical indie film scenario that we imagine ourselves in, and we decide how we would handle and tackle the problem that Eric puts forth. Ulrich has never heard this question, and I'm going to read it right now. So, Ulrich, you've just completed production on your first sci-fi feature. All right. The shoot went great, and thanks to the hard work of your cast and crew, your vision is really starting to take shape. You can really see the completely made-up planet and aliens of the finished film in your head. You spend the next few months on the edit, color correction, and special effects. You're ready to sit down with your sound effects team and really make the project come to life. However, when you sit down with the sound designer, the space and alien sounds elude you. You can hear them so clearly in your head, but translating them just isn't working. The designer is desperately trying to help by offering up sound effects from past projects, but nothing is working for you. How can you get your sound ideas across to this person? Do you, A, I love this. Okay. A, sit there and make weird noises at one another until one of you accidentally lands on something that sparks a note. B, record sound effects from other sci-fi films and have the sound designer use those as a reference point. C, just turn on a mic and make some noises rather than scouring the sound effects libraries. D, other. What do you do, director? What do you do?
Yeah, so I actually do this a lot in my work, because I always have some kind of monster or creature or something that needs to be, you know, created. So the way I go about it is normally like starting with references. So usually, like, I have a free sound effects library that I access called like freesound.org or something. And I would just go through there and be like, okay, here's a bunch of different options of like, you know, like alien sound. And like, this is things that literally people made on their own by, you know, going into the mic with their mouth or like using some other way to create it or like putting it in a computer and distorting it, you know. So I start there just to see if there's anything that like, you know, resonates with me or is close. And then if not, then I'll either take one of those samples, or I will do what one of the options. I will go into the mic with my own voice, because I have a mic right here, and then I'll put it into the computer and I'll try to like create something that sort of sounds a little bit like what I'm thinking about. But, you know, generally it's like through references to other movies, you know, it's through finding sound effects that have already exist that I like. Yeah, that free sound library. Also, a friend of the show, Oren Kaplan, gave me a humongous sound effects library when I was making the alternate that he had from someplace. And I used that, was really helpful, because there was like all kinds of alien noises and like ambient sounds and metallic dings and things like that. So like there was tons to like dive in through there to find. And then those were like ones I could put into my computer and like alter, you know, with like some easy Premiere sound tools and like kind of get something that would sort of sound more what I was thinking about. So I would basically do that. And then I would give it to the sound person, and they would go ahead and figure out, you know, how to create the sound that I was thinking of, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes it would be using a combination of the sounds that were royalty free that I had access to, or like modulating them in their own way, or whatever, you know? So yeah, it's just like a thing, a back and forth. And like, it takes a long time usually for me to find the right sound that really feels right. And I know I drive the sound mixers I work with crazy, and the sound designers, you know, because I really am picky. But yeah, you know, it's just one of those things that I really want to make sure feels authentic before I call it a day and send it to the mix. Because, you know, there are so many bad sounds, and a bad sound can ruin a movie really easily, you know, and ruin a moment really easily. Yeah. So I really feel like trying to get that right and the right mix of sounds. And, you know, oftentimes it's like, it's not just a roar or an alien sound, but it's like that combined with like a arm being ripped or blood splattering or whatever. So you have to like, it's not just one sound you have to think about. You have to think about all the sounds and how they all play together. And so then that becomes more of a mix thing, but it's just really, it's like this delicate dance that I love to play. You know, when you get it right, I just know, you know. And like, there's a big moment at the end of the alternate where this was like a big thing that took a long time to figure out, you know, with like the scream and the sounds and everything and the portal noise. It's like, it was very complicated to get it right. But I think where we landed was perfect. I love it. Does that answer the question? And Liz, what would you do? Like, how do you like to work with this?
I'm so glad that you were asked the question, because you had a really thoughtful answer. And I would be like, I just listen to things and I tell them what it feels right. And I don't, you know. And I think because world building is a challenge for me, because I often, I don't know, like my movies kind of sit in a contemporary space on Earth with not a lot of monsters or aliens, which is really cool. I mean, like, I had a wormhole, you know, in my last movie, but ultimately I was just left it up to the sound team and then told them when it felt right and when it didn't feel right. So I'm more of someone who likes to react to someone else. But Eric had something he wanted us to read as well. He said, to be read before or after doesn't matter. And he gave us a quote: movies are 30% visual and 70% sound. And that's from director Danny Boyle. And yeah, I know there's like a million titles that Danny Boyle has done, but I love 127 Hours. So I just wanted to shout out my love for that movie, which is so, so weird. But I'm just like sitting here thinking like, wow, I should really pay way more attention to sound and world building with sound.
Yeah. I mean, and just to double down on that quote, it's not just the sound effects that they're talking about. It's like the sound fidelity and quality. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I know we've talked about this before, but like, basically, the human brain will forgive visuals way more than it'll forgive sound. So if sound is off or sounds wrong, like, it hurts your movie way more than if the visual isn't quite right. You know, and it's so funny because, like, as filmmakers, you tend to overly think about the visuals. And, like, that's the thing that everyone focuses on. And, like, sound is often, like, just pooped on and, like, disregarded. But it's actually more important to have good sound than it is to have like good visuals. And, you know, as we all know, it is way easier to get good visuals today than it is to get good sound. So yeah, invest in a good sound team, because that's going to make the huge difference in, like, you know, people, you know, turning your movie off or watching the whole thing.
Oh yeah. And for what it's worth, I'm obsessive over music in movies. And that's where I get really into the nitty gritty. Like, I had this like no violin rule for a while where I didn't want any violins in anything. Violins. Why can't I say the word violin? Yeah. So there's like, and I'm a very, very picky person when it comes to music. So that's where all my attention is spent. But completely agree with you about sound quality. And I've actually missed out on distribution opportunities because a company thought that our sound quality wasn't good enough when it was. But it was this like, just concern. Like, there was a scene where they're like walking over rocks and they were like, this is too distracting. And the most bizarre things can happen in the pitch process where they might assess the quality of sound and it might miss you out, like help you miss out on an opportunity.
Yeah. No, I mean, in the QC process, like, they're always bringing up sound things. And like, I always have to defend my choices. Like, that was intentional. That was intentional.
Yeah.
That was intentional. Damn it. And then they're like, okay, fine. Like, okay. Jeez, guys, really. Just passed my movie already.
Yeah. So all of you out there, if you have a question, comment, or suggestion, please send it to podcast@makingmoviesishard.com. If you like the show, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter @MMIH Podcast, YouTube @Making Movies Is Hard Podcast. Thank you very much to Ben Steer for coming on the show. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Reimut, for doing all the amazing editing. Thanks to Robert California Jones for handling all of our social media. You're awesome. And thanks to our producer, Eric Toms, for also being awesome. Most importantly, thanks to all of you for listening, and talk to y'all next week.
Anyways, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, ready.
Okay. Jeff got everything.
5-5 moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.